Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello. Before we start, I'd like to thank some new patrons. So, Kathan, Catherine Robertson, Grace M. Teresa, and Che Christian Padron, thank you so much for your support. It means a great deal, and I hope you're enjoying the bonus content that you have access to now. What? I'm your host, Tom Kearns, and welcome to the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, episode 28, Gwisan Unrest. The period between Cynegils' baptism in 636 and the rise of Cadwalla in 685 is one in which the political history of the Gwisa becomes extremely complicated. This is because the political structure of the Gwisa that had developed by this time was one in which any male heir of Serdich was entitled to claim the throne. Thus, while the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle is committed to presenting a unified dynasty linking King Alfred all the way back to Serdich, it cannot totally hide the fact that the political situation among the Gwisa was extremely fraught, particularly on occasions when internal power politics spilled over into the realm of international relations. Such was the case with the attempted assassination of King Edwin of Northumbria. According to Bede, and we talked more about this in the episode on King Edwin, the man behind the plot was Cwichelm, King of the Gwisa. The only Cwichelm we find in West Saxon sources is a man closely associated with King Cynegils, possibly being his son or cousin or some other close relative. In the Chronicle, Cwichelm is only called King of the West Saxons in the entry for 626, which is clearly copied from Bede's history, which we know was one of the chronicler's primary sources. In all other references, usually relating to Cynegils' wars against the Britons and the expansion of Gwisan territory westwards, he is only ever called Cwichelm without a title. The inference from this, and from other similar situations, is that by the 630s, the Gwisa had instituted a system of multiple kings, with the senior king being overlord of all others. Something similar may be seen in Penda's Mercia, with the establishment of Peada and Merawal as kings of petty kingdoms. Politically, it made a certain amount of sense to have minor members of a dynasty hold some kind of political power on a more local level. Not only would it keep their ambitions in check, but it could also serve a useful military purpose, which we'll get into more later in this episode. Although Bede, and by extension the Chronicle, are careful not to implicate Cynegils in the plot to kill Edwin, it is difficult to see how Cwichelm could have acted without Cynegils' knowledge. The failed assassination may have been reflective of the Gwisa's international alliances. In trying to kill Edwin, they were perhaps expressing support for the exiled sons of Æthelfrith, Oswald and Oswiu. A close bond to the deposed dynasty is reflected later in Cynegils and Cwichelm's baptism by Birinus in 636, at which Oswald served as Cynegils' godfather. This was a crucial bond in Anglo-Saxon England, and it always marked a close alliance between the two parties involved. It was, particularly in the missionary period, but also later on when kings were dealing with Scandinavians, the role of godfather at baptism was often a way of subordinating other kings and forming a close familial alliance with them. Why would the kings of the Gwisa seek closer ties with the kings of the Northumbrians? If you think back to the episode on Penda, there I spoke about what I called his Cold War with Oswald, in which both sides attempted to curry support with the smaller kingdoms south of the Humber. Oswald's overtures to the Gewisse, then, may have been part of his plan to contain Penda, since we know that prior to the baptism, Cynegils and Quickhelm fought at least one battle against the Mercians. But it also seems that the Gewisse were hedging their bets somewhat, since in addition to receiving baptism with Oswald's sponsorship, Cynegils also facilitated the marriage of his son Kenweal to one of Penda's sisters. If you think back to the episode on Ceolwulf of Mercia, it was this marriage that probably produced the Mercian Sea Dynasty. It seems then that Cynegils was attempting to play the Mercians and the Northumbrians against each other, seemingly with some success, since he seems to have remained on fairly good terms with them both. Cynegils died around 642. We don't know when Quickhelm died. It's tempting to speculate that they were both killed at Mazafield with Oswald, since the timing of their deaths does seem oddly coincidental. But this is just speculation on my part, and it's possible that Quickhelm survived Cynegils, since the only reference to his being succeeded by his heir, Cuthred, comes from 648, and so possibly Quickhelm outlived Cynegils by a few years. Cynegils was succeeded by Kenweal. Upon becoming king, Kenweal had not yet accepted Christianity. We don't know how widely spread the religion was during Cynegils' reign. Bede naturally suggests that it was dominant, but we have no hard evidence to support or disprove that. The bishopric at Dorchester suggests a somewhat established church, but probably one that was still in its missionary phase. Certainly not all of Cynegils' family had converted, as Kenweal indicates. When discussing Kenweal, Bede makes it very clear that it was his initial paganism and hesitancy to accept Christianity that led to his being deposed by Penda in 645. In reality, it probably has more to do with the fact that in that year, Kenweal repudiated Penda's sister and possibly their children, and in revenge, Penda invaded Gewisse and drove Kenweal from the kingdom. Following the by now usual progression of Anglo-Saxon convert kings, Kenweal went into exile in East Anglia, and there he took refuge with King Unna and was baptised at his court. Upon returning to Gewisse around 648, Kenweal began a process of Christianisation, which saw the expansion of the church and its missionary reach. It's always difficult to speculate about people's motivations, but this does seem to indicate that Kenweal's conversion wasn't entirely self-serving and that it was, to some extent, genuine. His major innovation was in the creation of the Diocese of Winchester, in the lands conquered by Ceolwulf to the west of the Gewisse's heartlands. It was also around this time that he gave 3,000 hides of land to Cuthred, son of Quickhelm, in the area around Ashdown in the Upper Thames Valley. The creation of Winchester is a major event in Gewissen history, since from Kenweal's reign on, it became the focal point of Gewissen power. Why this move was made is debated. Bede says that it was because the Bishop of Dorchester, a Gaul named Agilbert, couldn't speak Saxon, and so Kenweal created a new bishopric under a man named Wina, who could speak his language. This hardly seems sufficient reason, though. Scholars have pointed to the gift of land to Cuthred as possibly indicating a tactical motivation behind the move westwards. The Upper Thames Valley was dangerously close to the Mercian city of London, and on at least one occasion, Penda's son Wulfhere ravaged Ashdown. It is possible, therefore, that the move to Winchester was made to secure the kingdom against Mercian attack. By elevating Cuthred, Kenweal was also following in a well-established tradition of securing one's borders by elevating sub-kings. This is the military benefit of multiple kingship I mentioned earlier. That the old Gewissen heartlands were increasingly under Mercian influence is seen in the elevation of a pro-Mercian bishop to Dorchester around the year 665. Kenweal's move westwards then certainly helped secure continued Gewissen independence. Along with this move, though, also came further expansion into British territory. In 658, Kenweal secured Gewissen control of the lands up to the River Parret, which runs through the modern counties of Somerset and Devon. Devon also contained many British settlements and monasteries. In particular, the monastery of Sherborne remembered Kenweal as a generous patron, and it was also under his reign that the British city of Exeter, also in Devon, was absorbed into the Gewisse and became a focal point for the intellectual life of several key Gewissen churchmen, including St. Boniface, who I will discuss in a later episode. After what was, by really any definition of the word, a successful reign, Kenweil died in the year 672, seemingly leaving no children besides those he'd had with Penda's sister, and thus leaving the throne of Gawissa empty. Thankfully, the proliferation of sub-kings meant that there were plenty of candidates to take the empty throne, but, as is usually the way with history, having too many candidates for a throne is often worse than not having any at all. Hi listeners, I wanted to take a second to tell you about the sponsor of today's episode, Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, restaurant-quality, and dietitian-approved, and it's all ready to go in 2 minutes with minimal meal prep. I've had some fantastic meals like butter chicken and tomato risotto with Factor, and I've got to say I've been extremely impressed with all of them. They genuinely are restaurant-quality. You'll get over 35 different options to choose from every week if you try out Factor, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, with pancakes, smoothies, and more, there's over 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and ready to go throughout the day. Factor also works around your schedule. You can order as little or as much as you need each week, and they even let you reschedule deliveries any time of when those unexpected somethings happen to pop up. And to top it all off, Factor is cheaper than ordering takeout, so it really is a smart move to try it out. Get started today and get after your goals. If you're interested in trying Factor, head to factormeals.com/anglo50 and use code anglo50 to get 50% off. That's code anglo50 at factormeals.com/anglo50 to get 50% off.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Following the death of Kenweil, the situation in Gawissa seems to have become extremely complicated. Two differing accounts survive of what happened. In the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle and the West Saxon Regnal List, Kenweil was succeeded for about a year by his second wife, a woman named Ceuxber. This is an extremely rare occurrence in Anglo-Saxon history, for a woman to succeed the throne and to rule as a queen. Despite this, though, hardly anything is recorded about her or her brief reign. And if we go by the other major account, which is Bede's, she, in fact, didn't reign at all. He says that after Kenweil's death, the sub-kings of the Gawissa attempted to divide the kingdom among themselves and ruled it for about 10 years. So what exactly is happening here? The chroniclers and the regnal list compilers may well be oversimplifying matters. In an effort to project an unbroken line of succession from Serdich, they may have obscured other claimants to the throne at this time. On the other hand, Bede may well have seen Kenweil's second marriage as illegitimate, and thus refused to list Ceuxber as queen because to him she had no legitimate claim to the position. He may also have been motivated by the power of Wessex in his own day. King Ina, who ruled at the time Bede wrote his history, was a descendant of Ceolwulf, and made this a key part of his claim to legitimacy, thus removing all other lines of descent from Serdich from the political stage. Ceuxber and the two kings who followed her, prior to the reign of Caedwalla, were not descendants of Ceolwulf, and therefore, in the eyes of Bede's sources who were loyal to Ina, were illegitimate rulers. Thus, Bede may have consciously or unconsciously downplayed their importance by labelling them as just sub-kings, and glossing over Ceuxber entirely. King Alfred was not a direct descendant of Ina, and doesn't seem to have placed the same emphasis on ancestry that he did. Probably because all other lines of the family had been so utterly removed from authority by his day that they were no longer any real threat to him. Regardless of why, it's frustrating that we know so little about Ceuxber, No sooner does she appear in the chronicle than she is gone, and replaced by a king named Ashwena. Ashwena reigned for only 2 years, dying in 676. He does seem to have been a somewhat successful king, though, since the only major event of his reign is his defeat of a Mercian invasion in 675. Given that this was the beginning of the Mercian supremacy, that certainly was an impressive feat, and indicates that Ashwena shouldn't just be written off as a no-name sub-king. Ashwena was followed by a man named Kentwena, who, according to the chronicle, was a son of Cynegils. Much like Ashwena, Kentwena seems to have been quite a successful king, despite Bede's silence about him. His major area of focus was to the west, and he's recorded in various traditions as leading several campaigns against the Britons of Dumnonia. The chronicle in 682 says that he, quote, drove the Britons to the sea, end quote. Although exactly what this means is unclear, since the kingdom of Dumnonia continued to exist after this date. The prolific churchman Aldhelm records much more information about Kentwena. He tells us that he won 3 great battles against the Britons, and that he was a pagan upon taking the throne, but converted to Christianity soon after. Aldhelm was writing only about a generation after Kentwena lived, and one of his sources was the king's own daughter, Eadburh, with whom Aldhelm was in correspondence. So, while we have no way of really verifying what Aldhelm says, there is good reason to think that it is somewhat reliable. It's puzzling, then, that the chronicle records so little about him. Exactly why this isn't really known. Possibly it's just that the chroniclers didn't have access to what Aldhelm wrote about Kentwena, or that they found his lack of specific dates problematic, although that didn't really stop them elsewhere. Probably, since Kentwena was not a direct ancestor of Alfred's, they felt it wasn't really important to go into too much detail about him, although they certainly went into more detail than Bede did. Yet, even so, the sheer lack of detail that they offer is slightly surprising. For example, they don't record that in around the year 685, Kentwena abdicated the throne to become a monk. That is a piece of information we get entirely from Aldhelm. After Kentwena abdicated, the kingdom of the Gewissa was left to fall into the hands of an energetic young warrior by the name of Cadwalla, who was to lead the Gewissa into a bold new future and oversee the emergence of an entirely new identity for the small southwestern kingdom. For now, though, what should we make of the period following Kenwayar's death? It was certainly confusing, and Bede's account makes it sound a lot like a period of civil war. But we cannot prove that, however, and instead the military successes of Ashwena and Kentwena seem to be inconsistent with a kingdom ravaged by internal divisions, particularly since the Gewissa had by now a fairly long history of multiple kingship. It seems that Kenwael's death probably would not have been too much of a problem for them. But the records we have are so patchy that we can't really go into too much detail about the years between 672 and 685. Most of what we can say is either inference or unverifiable. What is certain, though, is that after the abdication of Kentwena, Gewissan politics entered a new phase, which saw the kingdom transform from the kingdom of the Gewissa into the kingdom of the West Saxons. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. If you have, I'd like to request that you leave a like or a comment or a rating or a review or a subscription on whatever platform you use. Anything is extremely appreciated and helpful. We also now have a Patreon page where for as little as $3 a month you can get access to our bonus episodes, which come out every other Wednesday between main series episodes, and also the option to listen ad-free to all of the published episodes. I hope you'll consider coming over to check it out. But for now, thank you for listening. I've been your host, Tom Kearns, and this has been the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. Hello, everyone.
My name is Tom Kearns, and I host the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, where I cover the history and culture of England from the departure of the Romans in the 5th century to the Norman conquest in 1066. So far, we've surveyed the collapse of Roman rule in Britain, the migration of the Anglo-Saxons, and the history of Northumbria from its beginnings in the mists of legend to its destruction at the hands of Viking raiders in the 9th century. I hope you'll come and give it a go.